You are listening to 97.3 FM WRIR, and this is Open Source RVA. On today's edition of Richmond's weekly audio news digest, it's all about the art. We talk with Councilman John Beliles and artist Ed Trask about the forthcoming RVA Street Art Festival. We'll also talk to Ashley Hawkins, the executive director of 23 Gallery, a nonprofit screen printing gallery that will use a steamroller to make art at the event. But first, here are some of the top stories making headlines right now.
For Richmond Public Media, I'm Brittany Tracy, and here's the news. This is the first of a four-part series on efforts in Richmond and Central Virginia to improve food access, sustainability, and local agriculture-based economies. Ann Darby, Senior Planner at Richmond Regional Planning District Commission and the Interim Food Policy Coordinator for the City of Richmond, says that efforts to build a food hub, part distribution center, part educational resource, are underway. This coordinative structure was a key recommendation made by the Mayor Dwight C. Jones Food Policy Task Force, which finalized its two-year consummate report in July. However, the recommendations were not for the government to implement directly. Rather, the task force served as a forum for professionals in urban planning, nutrition, environmental sciences, local living systems, and food justice to assess Richmond's food-related challenges and determine potential solutions. It's up to those same professionals to pursue the group's recommendations. James Wallace of Grow RVA handles research and planning for the burgeoning food hub.
The bare skeletons of a food hub is basically aggregation, and then you can have other processes involved, like a commercial kitchen, a sorting and processing and grading facility as well. But what we are really trying to do is start focused and small so we can execute it successfully, and then be able to grow within our, you know, two-year, three-year, five-year plan into a multifaceted food hub.
Grow RVA is the local umbrella organization that will be heading the food hub effort, including oversight during the initial phase, parsing and incorporating all Richmond-specific factors, and bringing the food community and Richmond's public on board with the effort through outreach, education, and advocacy. Karen Atkinson, founder and owner of Grow RVA, is the mastermind behind the South of the James Farmers Market, which she began six immensely successful seasons ago. It's, quote, so well attended, it's now the largest producer-only farmers market in the state and one of the top 25 in the country. The success has been a boon for growers of produce, to be sure, but mere hours at the market have become so crucial to the profit return on these homesteads. Karen Atkinson.
Interesting thing that has evolved from the creation of that is that three-fourths of my vendors there probably make two-thirds of their income in that one day. And so from a sustainability standpoint, we wanted to provide them, because the weather, especially this summer, has been so unpredictable for midweek markets and other markets, we wanted to provide them the opportunity to have extended selling time and other places where they could actually source their produce. And so the creation of a food hub seemed to be a natural fit with what we're already doing.
Unique benefits for small-time, small-scale local farmers will stem from this food hub opportunity. The hub would purchase from the farmers in bulk and handle aggregation, packaging, and distribution. Therefore, farmers would grow produce for and derive most of their income from wholesale. This logistical shift will require close working relationships with each farm. And, though Atkinson currently conducts farm visits on behalf of South of the James, fresh relationship forging and information gathering through the lens of the food hub is a crucial first step.
Part of the reason that the food hub in Charlottesville works is that education is a huge component of it, not only to the public or to the institutions or the restaurants that are buying from them. There's also, you know, an education component that involves the farmers and getting them to maybe think a little bit differently about their business plan. If they were to grow two extra rows every season and knew that that was already sold somewhere, then it's money in their pocket before they even bring anything to market. So anything then they're making at market is extra on top of, you know, their income they've already gotten.
Stephanie Gans, the food-based small business coach who does PR and marketing for Grow RVA, said that the Food Hub's leaders will spend these initial months asking questions of and compiling information from the participants in Richmond's local food system. Gans says the Food Hub will need to assess each farm's production processes and capacity.
In the short term, it's about asking questions and finding out what it would take for buyers to be able to source more products locally and what it would take for growers to be able to consistently provide those products for buyers. Meeting with people and having these one-on-one conversations about, where their farms are located, what they're currently growing, and what they could potentially do in seasons to come.
Meanwhile, Atkinson says efficiency measures aim to make the south of the James market more sustainable.
One of the other aspects we're looking at so that there is no waste in any of this is we have a partnership or building a partnership with the cannery in Farmville. So anything that is left over would be able to be canned in that same week too.
More information can be found at www.growrva.com/food-hub and in the Richmond Public Media headlines all through September. Next week, part two, how the Food Hub seeks to serve purchasing institutions like hospitals, schools, and local restaurateurs.
With a new school year back in session for everyone in Central Virginia, many universities and local school systems are welcoming new students as well as new school administrators. VCU welcomed 4 new members, including 2 high-profile headline makers, who received appointments to the Board of Visitors in July by Governor Bob McDonnell. One appointee once had a say in international monetary policy. Jon Snow served under President George W. Bush as the nation's 73rd Secretary of the Treasury. He's a longtime resident of Richmond and once served on the city's school board. VCU's other newsmaker became notorious during the near collapse and federal bailout of the U.S. automotive industry. Rick Wagoner was chairman and CEO of General Motors during the crisis. Wagoner grew up here in Richmond. Graduating from John Tucker High School, Wagoner's career in the auto industry ended with his forced resignation from GM after 32 years with the company. The third appointee is Nancy Everett, BlackRock Managing Director and head of the U.S. Fiduciary Management Solutions. Everett is also a VCU accounting graduate. The last appointee, whose arrival may offer some signal to the university's commitment to its efforts to build a new children's hospital for the city, Steve Worley, president and CEO of Louisiana Children's Medical Center. Worley graduated from VCU with a bachelor's and returned for his master's. The 4 replace outgoing members Lillian Lambert, W. Baxter Perkinson, Rector John Doswell, and Stuart Siegel, whose major financial gift helped fund construction of the Siegel Center, home of the Havoc.
A group calling itself the Richmond Coalition for Quality Education helped mute first day of school fanfare at Tuesday's Richmond School Board meeting by presenting the board with a lawsuit. Community activist Gregory Day said that the suit seeks to overturn the elementary school attendance zones approved by the board in August, telling the school board that the lawsuit is one of many to come. Various other members of the coalition took to the mic, including former city councilman Marty Jewell, who claimed that the closure of Clark Springs Elementary and the rezoning was done for a handful of racist white folks and, according to him, in secret. "This is the only way we feel you will come to the table," Day told the board. The board has had its fair share of difficult news of late, with last month's release of the district's poor performance on the state's recently revised standards of learning tests. Interim Superintendent Jonathan Lewis, who took over as superintendent in July after the resignation of Yvonne W. Brandon, addressed the scores. "What we're talking about really is not a fix, but a transformation," said Lewis, acknowledging that while scores fell statewide, Richmond's decline was significantly more serious. According to the Richmond Department of Education, Richmond showed declines in 27 of 34 categories, including 9 tests on which the scores dropped by 20 percentage points or more. His plan for transformation included 4 points: attendance, curriculum, teachers, and principals. "We have the power to transform this school division," Lewis said. "I truly believe we are on the cusp of greatness." His speech did not impress all members of the board. Shonda Harris-Muhammad, 6th District, said it wasn't good enough to hear a presentation. "All of this sounds good and looks good, but what does the data say?" she asked. The meeting took an unlikely detour as the board took a vote on whether a political rally would be allowed to take place at one of the city's public schools. Permission for the event had been requested and granted, though the board's facilities policy does not allow political rallies on school premises. The event was slated to begin at 6:30 p.m. that day, and the issue was raised at 6:20. Superintendent Lewis noted that to shut down the rally minutes before it began would be embarrassing for the board. He said the fact that the event ever was approved in the first place was a processing issue, suggesting the board should reconsider how it reviews such requests. Though no mention was made of which political candidate or which school was to be used, Republican gubernatorial candidate Ken Cuccinelli's website on Wednesday featured news of an education policy rally in Richmond on Tuesday and included a picture of the event in what appeared to be the library of a Richmond school. Meanwhile, 9th District Board Member Tichy Pickneaps also made Cuccinelli's website after penning a weekend editorial in the Times-Dispatch in which she endorsed Cuccinelli's K-12 education plan, which features a raft of proposals that include expansion of charter schools and state funding for schools operated by religious institutions. "The education of our children is the number one issue for me," Pickneaps wrote, "and the Attorney General's plan would significantly improve Virginia's education system by giving students and parents more options." The next school board work session will take place Monday, October 7th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. on the 17th floor of City Hall. For Open Source RVA, I'm Onofrio Castilla.
The Fall Line Fest comes to downtown Richmond this Friday and Saturday, September 6th and 7th. Sponsored by VCU Arts, Venture Richmond, and many more, the festival showcases music from 42 artists, including No BS Brass, Speedy Ortiz, Thou, and Inter Arma, and DJ sets from Neon Indian and WRIR's Mike Medic, or peruse seven gallery spaces, including 1708, Candela, and Cork, or enjoy Richmond's food culture at Ipanema, Pasture, The Well, Saison, and Rappahannock. Or all three. Got a ticket? Wristband registration at the corner of Broad and Belvedere will be held until 8 p.m. tonight and between noon and 8 p.m. on Saturday. For more information or to purchase tickets, you can visit www.falllinefest.com.
Bus stop, wet day, she's there, I say, please share my umbrella. Bus stop, bus go, she stays, love grows under my umbrella.
The RVA Street Art Festival returns to Richmond on Wednesday, September the 11th, kicking off 5 days of outdoor painting, sculpture, and mixed media from a bevy of local, national, even international artists. Last year's inaugural edition of the festival saw the on-spot creation of a giant series of murals along Richmond's flood wall. This year's event will be held at the former GRTC bus depot on Carey Street and will, according to its organizers, showcase the creative power of street art, liven up the drab walls, and attract people to the immense outdoor art gallery, as well as spark a creative discussion about transportation. My guests today on Open Source RVA are 1st District City Councilman John Beliles and artist Ed Trask. They founded and organized the Street Art Festival, which is growing into one of those special must-attend events that is painting Richmond's downtown in a whole new light. Welcome, you two. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, before we talk about this year's event, maybe you two could explain last year's Street Art Festival to those who might have missed it. What happened along the flood wall?
Well, we Ed and I got together in 2011. I attended a trip to Venice in 2009 and saw Shepherd Ferry doing some public mural sessions, and I thought it was a really neat idea to see art come to life. And Ed and I worked on a project in 2011 for Altria, and I came up to him afterwards and I said, "Hey, you know, can we do something like what I saw in Richmond?" And we got together and we garnered some corporate support, and Ed found a bunch of amazing street artists from all over the country, and the power plant building is what it is today because of that festival.
And at the time, you were working for the city's planning and development department.
That's right.
This year, you guys are taking over the GRTC bus depot. Will it be the same crew or a different group of artists?
There are some different artists. You know, this year we have more sculptors. Mm-hmm. We have some of the same artists coming back, and some of these artists we have coming back have a lot of Virginia ties. You know, mm-hmm. There was a kind of an incestuousness that happens within the street art family, you could say, or the community. And so these people had a lot of ties to Virginia and to a lot of our friends. So we are definitely bringing some of them back, mm-hmm. But there's some new faces coming in.
How many total?
About, I would say...
25, I think.
Yeah, 40 artists pretty much total. More than half being local artists and the other ones being artists coming from out of town. And to be honest with you, you know, we have so much talent here in Richmond and in Virginia. So for us, it's just so important to showcase that talent and to showcase the new talent coming up. So if you have somebody like Pose, who's probably one of, you know, like king of graffiti right now, the guy is just phenomenal, next to a new up-and-coming artist, it makes that new up-and-coming artist step up their game. And you never know. There might be someone we don't even know who comes up and it's just all of a sudden starts illuminating, becomes a star.
And you have some of the older regional artists like Paul DePasquale. He was here last week, and he says that he's going to be working on something. What is he doing?
Well, we don't know yet. That's a mystery. There's a lot of sculpture that will take place between now and next week that we'll develop. But the great thing about this year is we've made an emphatic point to include a lot of local artists. And 2 weeks ago, we held a pre-festival paint-off where 21 artists, the first to send us emails from reading our Facebook page, were able to sign up. They all got 3 hours to paint a 6x6 mural, and about five of those will be selected by a random group of creative people in Richmond, and they will get a larger spot at the wall. So the real idea is to get people like Pose and Hence and some of these others that have huge national and international followings to say, you know what, I like this kid from Richmond. He does really good work. And then all of a sudden that gets put out on 25,000 Facebook followers get it. And, you know, it really expands the Richmond scene. Last year, one of the amazing things, just from our limited Facebook and Tumblr pushing, we got picked up by blogs in Germany, Italy, and the UK. And, you know, this is for a first-time festival that it's such a visual thing. It's made for Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And that's the great thing. It'll put Richmond on the map for a weekend, for 5 days. People are going to be focusing in what's going on here.
Talk about some of the local and regional artists who will be helping out this year.
Well, we have people like El Camino coming back. He's got, you know, Virginia ties. We have a gentleman named Matt Betts, who he did three portraits at the last one, and he's just an up-and-coming star here in Richmond. He's just an amazing artist. We have people like Brad Bacon coming and doing some more work. We have Heidi Trippinier, who's going to be engaging some of her University of Richmond students coming. Suzanne Whittier, who will be bringing some high school students from Appomattox to do a piece. And we have some different ladies coming in to do some work, and some different younger kids coming in that really haven't really shown their face yet in the city, but have some pretty good raw talent. So,
how important is that to bring the unknowns in, not just the people who are already established, but new voices?
It has to happen. I mean, obviously, you got to have a good diversity of artists coming in, but it's that young talent that for me is so exciting.
You know? And I'll get Ed to explain this because I still can't do it. But the thing that I've never seen or even heard of in Richmond there's a gentleman from young guy from Baltimore and one from Philly that are coming to do what's called camera obscura, and Ed can explain it better than I can. But it's something very interesting and unique art form that you really haven't seen around here yet. But yeah, they're going to introduce it to us.
Yeah, these guys are really amazing, and a lot of the ideas you'll go into a vacant building or a derelict building, and you'll take a room as it appears in its disheveled self, you know, kind of abandoned way. You spray the whole room white, and then you make it completely light tight so that it's completely dark when you close the door. Then you make your lens. You actually put a small hole out into the world. So say it's out into a moving street. You put a little small lens in it, and then when the doors are closed and there's no light coming in, the light will actually go through the small lens and appear on the wall opposite, upside down, the way we visually see things, but our brain automatically flips it back up the other way. So these gentlemen are going into buildings, they're setting up these rooms, these little basically like giant cameras, and then they're time elapsing what happens within this camera. So you're getting this crazy view of reality in the world outside of this derelict building. You're getting, they're showing you like a new life and the life in the world that happens outside right. of the old decay. It's beautiful. And they're going to set up, they've already set up one at the Street Art Festival, so you can see an example of how it works. Mm-hmm. It's mind-blowing. You don't realize that's what you're seeing. This is what reality really is, that our brains actually make that shift. And they're going to have videos showing the different time lapses they've done in different buildings all around.
Good. Okay.
And they've set up three different ones at the site.
Uh-huh.
And we'll see those movies also.
Wow. Well, talk about the logistics of this particular site. Well, also, how was it chosen? What's the appeal of doing it at the GRTC bus depot?
Well, one of the goals is to just, like with the power plant last year, it was a big, brown, ugly wall, and now it's an outdoor art gallery, and people stop and talk and congregate there. GRTC property was moved to the new location about 3 years ago, and this property has been sitting here. They're not going to sell it for a few more years, and it's kind of monochromatic and pretty much a neighborhood eyesore. And Ed and I had looked at it last year. We had talked about it, but we'd kind of made the decision to start with a smaller festival rather than, you know, try and bite off more than we could chew. So this year we talked about it again and we said, all right, well, this is worth a shot. And we went to GRTC and we talked to a few people there and they liked the idea. And we went to the board and, you know, the GRTC has been fantastic. I mean, they've bent over backwards to help us and get the site ready. A lot of the sculpture pieces will be made from old bus parts found on the site. And they've just been a pleasure to work with.
How much total space will there to be worked with?
The site is 5.5 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to use just about all of it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we have one thing that's coming that's amazing is you figure there's a parking lot area that's
a couple of acres.
Yeah, like probably, about two and a half acres, maybe almost 3 acres. And that's going to be Ride Richmond is going to be making a bicycle obstacle course so that people, you know, kids can be dropped off there. The whole area is fenced in, and kids can learn how to ride their bicycles in the city. And they'll be putting planners and actually like a whole scenario on the ground. They'll paint it in.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be bike polo. They're going to have ramps so people can ride. But the idea is that, just to show that there is another viable way to transport yourself, and the hope, you know, to make it into kind of a bike park.
Mm-hmm.
And if the smallest nudge can be made that, you know, smart development can happen in this little corner, because obviously it's emblematic for what growth is happening in this city. I mean, 5.5 acres, if you include Dominion Power, what, 7+ acres? My God, that doesn't happen in very many cities. So how this place is developed is definitely a symbol of how development's going to happen in this city from now on.
And, right. and the festival has an opportunity to change the expectation for the right. property's future use. So rather than somebody coming in and saying, oh, we're going to put up a 5-story condo building, which, you know, the neighborhood probably wouldn't like, over the next couple of years, if GRTC sees this festival as a success, we may be able to keep the bike park as a permanent fixture.
Mm-hmm.
We may be able to one of the option or one of the parts of the festival is a fresh market, which, you know, could evolve into a weekly farmers market type thing.
Right.
There'll be food trucks from Richmond Food, RVA Foodies.
Yeah, I was going to say proceeds from those events will go to Art 180.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct. Yes. And so, you know, there may be a food truck court there. So the idea is between now and 2016, when GRTC anticipates selling the property, the neighborhood and the larger community come to expect a certain type of use. So when it is sold to a developer, you know, it comes with conditions like, you know, don't just level the site and turn it into something that's exclusive and make it a community neighborhood center.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. And, you know, you have Bazaar Market coming and raising money for the Young Writers Guild. You have some really great things happening, but I think even when you approach the different neighborhood associations like Robinson Street or the Fan Disc Association, you talk about it, they don't want to see a Target there. I think the majority of people in the area really want to see something smart. And it just happens to be that is where the trolleys, the original trolleys that moved the population, happened to come from. It's ironic that that is actually going to be where the new realm of transportation comes from. I think that's going to be smart growth. We also have Rapid Transit coming and putting an installation in at the Street Art Festival to kind of show, okay, here's a map of the antiquated way how we used to mm-hmm. travel around the city, which is a trolley map. And then juxtaposed to that will be what Rapid Transit would like to see with Rapid Transit system in a map around the city.
And speaking of, if I may, speaking of the trolleys, mention the UR wall along Carey Street.
Right. One of the things also is that, you know, the unbelievable power of public art. I approached University of Richmond and said, hey, we have a 380-foot wall. What would happen if you guys took this wall for the 3 years before this place is sold, or 4 years, whatever, you turn this into a community gallery. Let's make this a gallery that the people can actually tell you what they want to see. Hmm. And, you know, maybe this population of people around here, maybe people can't make it to University of Richmond, but this is your chance to give the community a gallery they want to have. They were amazing. We worked with Amy Howard and Alex and Ed Ayers from University of Richmond. And so the first show they're going to put up, we also got a collaboration with Worth Higgins and with the Valentine Museum. So Bill mm-hmm. Martin really stepped up and gave us a full visual history of the trolley. So mm-hmm. that will be the first show that comes up on that wall for the Street Art Festival.
So you'll be able to walk down Carey Street and see the history of the trolley mm-hmm. system. The first trolley system in America was right here. And you'll be able to relive and see that history.
Great.
It's really neat.
We also have Harry Kolatz, you know, who's working on a video to show the history of that.
He'll have
a preview of that. And, I mean, my God, you've talked to Harry on this show,
right? Oh, sure,
right?
Yeah. He's been on many times.
He's an absolute genius. But to have him, oh, my God, to have him talk about the demise of the trolley system will bring tears to your eyes.
And we've seen a portion of the documentary, and it's fantastic. It's not, I don't think it's due till next year, but
Now, how will that be shown? Where would that be shown?
In one of the buildings.
Okay. And all throughout the festival, or just one night?
It's pretty much up to Harry.
Right. I mean, the hope I have is that it'll be a loop, and that you'll just continue to show.
Yeah, I hope so too. Yeah. Well, talk about the challenges of putting something like this together in Richmond. We had a little conversation before the interview about how things were before, and murals and street art wasn't always welcome here by the powers that be. How have things changed in the last few years where we can now be looking at this event that's really becoming
here's a fine example. I had many years ago, you know, Banditos opened up near Oregon Hill, and I painted a giant mural of a loosely clad woman on top of Pancho Villa's shoulders, mm-hmm. we'll say. And, you know, by no means was it profane or anything of that nature. But one person who happened to be walking across made one phone call. And within a day, the owner of Banditos was told that he would lose his CO or his occupancy.
Yeah.
If
certificate of occupancy.
If they didn't paint over it immediately. It was funny. So many people could voice their opinion and have things change. Now, as we've been seeing, that it's not quite that way. I think some of the old conservative, I'll say blue blood, people that were so against art and of any nature, mm-hmm. are starting to kind of trickle away from government, if that makes any sense, or the city.
Yeah.
And I think all of a sudden the city is also starting to see the viability and the power of art in itself. We're in one of the most creative cities that could possibly be. We've empowered ourselves with this. And so finally, they're seeing that, oh, my God, this really can revitalize areas. This really can change something. And it's not a bad thing for economic development either.
No, it's a rather cheap way of economic development, 100%. Considering what we've thrown money at in the past.
Well, and it's, you know, 20 years ago, urban was a four-letter word. People didn't want to go downtown. It was scary and not a pleasant place, and it's completely different today. Mm-hmm. And people want to go downtown. They want to live downtown.
What do you think's changed? Has it been stuff like the folk festival?
Well, it's a combination of things. It's VCU's 8 times bigger than it was in the 80s. You know, it's a change in mindset of people got kind of tired of cookie cutter box suburban. They're still, you know, suburbs are great, but people come downtown to see the action.
Else.
They come down for First Fridays. They come down for the folk festival. They come down for the river.
Yeah.
You know, more people visit the James River Park system from Henrico than they do from the city.
I was just there this weekend, and it was just overflowing with people.
And so the whole mentality of what, you know, downtown or the urban core is has mm-hmm. changed, and it's not what it meant in the 80s when we were younger.
It's funny. I really see it as this crazy Molotov cocktail of things. And when I say that, it's because you lost the sensibility of regionalism. So all of a sudden you're in an information-driven age where trends are seen immediately. You see it. You know, you go to a government official, you go to somebody and you say, I want to bring street art. It's going to help. They're five clicks away on Google to get an example of how it helped Portland, how it helped Philly, how it mm-hmm. helped San Francisco. That information is there. You also have, so that sense of regionalism's gone. We're in an information age. You have people leaving the suburbs, coming back into the city, so they want to see it. And it's a younger clientele that's moving back into the city. They expect that creativity.
Or they're already here and have been here.
100%. And you have a development of some of the old industry that's becoming that new condo, and they expect that little extra push of development that you give them through repainting facades with art.
Well, what do you say to critics, though, who still hold on to that idea that some of the outdoor art is, you know, and just an elevated form of graffiti? Do you ever hear that kind of negativity?
Well, as speaking completely not as an artist, art is, you know, in the eye of the beholder. I mean, you can walk through the Louvre, and some people stick around on the classical mm-hmm. area, and some people love the paintings, and vice versa. I mean, you know what you like, and you know, that not everything's going to please everybody, but this is something that is a demonstration of not only the artistic nature of Richmond, but the creative process in putting all this together. Last year, the festival was basically murals, and that was a huge success. Everybody from, you know, I heard a 90-year-old grandmother say she couldn't wait to bring her grandchildren back the next day. Mm-hmm. And this year, it's so much broader with Ashley, who, you know, from Studio 2-3, and Vaughn, who's putting the sculpture together, and Patience is Light of Human Kindness. I mean, it's so much bigger, and it is more encompassing than we could have dreamed of, you know, 8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And people will come down for one reason. That you may come down because you like sculpture, you may come down because you like murals, and you're going to walk away falling in love with some other type of art form that you never even thought of or mm-hmm. never even really considered. And that's the beauty of having this site and the size of it allows all of this extra stuff to go on.
And you know, no matter what, I mean, I can't imagine not having public radio. I can't imagine not having 97.3. I don't have to listen to it, but I choose to listen to it. And it's the same thing. You don't have to look at some of this public art, but public art is so much bigger. It's not quantitative, but it's bigger than all of us. It stops every single person. Doesn't matter socioeconomically where you stand, anything. You look at this, it's an even game. Mm-hmm. You make your interpretation of it. Mm-hmm. I can listen to your radio station. I don't have to. I can look at this public art. I don't have to. It doesn't matter. Making people have to make this creative judgment, I think, is vital. It's important.
And people forget, you know, things like the Lincoln Memorial, that's a work of public art.
Mm-hmm.
It means different things to different people, but it's so powerful for millions of reasons. And each of them can be different. And same thing happens here, is that this site is going to be transformed and it will attract and draw people for a number of different reasons. And, you know, we don't necessarily care what they are. It's just, it's drawing them in.
Well, it's like Paul DePasquale last week. I asked him about the negative reaction to the Arthur Ashe statue.
Right.
You know, that statue got a wide range of different reactions. And he said he wasn't thin-skinned about it at all. It got people talking about art.
Absolutely.
Right. You know?
And that's what next week's going to do.
Right, right.
And I will say, even before I joined council, you know, the city has been fantastic about supporting this.
I was going to ask what kind of help they were providing, and also some of the local sponsors.
Well, what happened with Ed 20 years ago at Bandidos, you know, nobody today is going to threaten to take away your certificate of occupancy because of a mural on the side of a building.
Well, hopefully he'll come to us first.
Exactly.
That happens,
but the city, you know, they supported us. They supported the G40 last year. They supported the Richmond Mural Project this year. They're supporting us again. And it's, you know, a lot of cities look at what's going on in street art as, oh, it's a nuisance, or, you know, we don't want it. And and Richmond's been very forward thinking about it.
I wanted to clear up one thing. I had heard that the GRTC bus depot was having a problem with some contamination. Any dangers there, or has that been cleaned up? Talk about that a little bit.
It's in the process of being cleaned up. They did a full site analysis, and the two buildings that are still currently undergoing some remediation are not going to be used for the festival.
Mm-hmm.
The repair shop and one of the other buildings, they're getting some remediation done and fully in compliance with Department of Environmental Quality and EPA. And one of the reasons the company decided, from my understanding, to slow clean the property was, A, it could leave a lot of the historic buildings intact, which would make a future developer eligible for tax credits. Mm. But also, you know, the real estate market's not great to sell such a valuable piece of property. In a couple of years, it'll only get more money for it. So,
and this is not something immensely toxic either.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
hydraulic fluid.
Right.
I drink that every day. You know,
it's not Yucca Mountain.
Sleep in it. Right. And it's not severe radiation. And there isn't an ounce of danger of anything happening to anybody to come to this festival.
And we've spent so much time there in the last couple of months, and there's nothing wrong with us. So.
I was going to say, y'all have an unusual glow.
A little hard time. But,
hey, just so people aren't confused, this is different than the G40 Art Summit, which was held almost concurrently with the Street Art Festival last year. There's no connections at all between the street art and the G40.
Right. There is no connection. I mean, we're very supportive of Shane bringing artists into the city because we love seeing creativity come here. But we have been separate, and for this one in particular, we're really trying to showcase local talent. We're really trying to showcase the revitalization process of public art and to just show that this is a Richmond-based, community-based thing. And the Richmond Mural Project brought a lot of that also, but they were more focused on out-of-town artists. We want to bring some out-of-town artists and really focus on what we have here. You know, mm-hmm. we have an amazing talent here.
And they're going to be in Washington, D.C. this year. They're not doing Richmond
The Richmond Mural Project was last month, or actually it was in late July. Mm-hmm. And the G40 event was in Richmond last year, but the organizer, Shane, of the G40 this year is actually doing it in Washington.
Right, okay.
Where he's based.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they're different sides of the same coin, which mm-hmm. is art and creativity. It's just we have a different focus.
Right.
Yeah, so he came as the Richmond Mural Project and will come next year as a mural project. G40 was here last year and this year, D.C., and supposedly he'll take it to another place next year, which is it's a mm-hmm. cool model.
I think I've had you guys on before to talk about this, but Richmond's Public Art Commission is going to be playing with an amazing amount of money in the coming years, nearly $3 million, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Is Richmond ready to kind of transform itself into, I mean, with all these newfound opportunities, to become like a welcoming home for public art? Do you see like a real shift here with your event, with the Public Art Commission's charge to do more and have more resources? Are we at kind of a pivotal point here?
I think we passed the pivotal point.
Right. I do believe we're in a new renaissance of that. I really do believe that. And, with building a new master plan for the Public Arts Commission and really working on that, it's not taken lightly. There's a new future for public art in the city, and I think majority of the inhabitants are actually ready for it. They're ready to see a change. And we're not just talking about street art festivals or small murals here and there. We're talking about major sculpture. We're talking about major public art interacting with architecture, interacting with life-changing parks and this
interacting with history.
Well, and 100%, and that has the historical tie. This the story of why we're here can never be forgotten. You know, it doesn't have to. Every piece of art doesn't have to be latent in with history, and doesn't have to be tied down by history. But at the same time, mm-hmm. we're Richmonders. That's why we're here. We're proud of our city where we live in. Let's tell the story.
And public art today is more than just. It's not just in a museum anymore. I mean, it is, if you look at the Bean in Chicago, I mean, it is a tourist destination. If mm-hmm. you go to Chicago, you want a picture of yourself in front of that or underneath it or whatever. Right. And there are things along the waterfront in Baltimore that kids can climb on and wear themselves out. And there's a funny little xylophone that you can play and, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of different ways that you can interact. And the city can use that new master plan for public art and tie it in not only with the historic nature of Richmond, but the tourism part that people come here to experience.
Just to go over the itinerary here, the Street Art Festival starts September 11th with mural sessions at 11 a.m. That'll be out there at the
11 to 6 every day.
11 to 6 every day. And then something, the artist forum will be at the Bird Theater.
Correct.
On Thursday, September 12th at 6:30 p.m.
Right. And that Ed should say a word about that, because that's a real opportunity for people to come out and listen to some of these local and national.
I was
going to
say, what can people expect at the Bird Theater?
At the Bird, we'll have an open forum where we have local artists and internationally known artists together. And a lot of the thematics behind it are talking about where I think a lot of the street artists, where really it started. You know, this was a thing that started with them by themselves, illegally putting something up on a wall mm-hmm. in the street. Mm-hmm. To make their mark, to start a movement, and it goes back to that sensibility of being regional, where these trends, these people, these groups of people were doing it without having the internet to show everybody what they were doing. The internet hits, the information age hits. There's the perfect amalgamation of street art, graffiti with go-go, with hip hop, with everything that starts happening, and it becomes a commercial viability. All of a sudden, street art is something that you start to see at the Whitney Biennial. Then when the whole fair system kicks in, you're not going to go to Miami Art Basel without seeing tons of walls completely taken over. You're not going to see that. So now you realize that street art is actually shaping the art world. And so it's massive. So what we want to talk about is, How does that happen? How does it make you feel? How did you feel being alone by yourself doing something that really not that many people cared about, to all of a sudden being somebody mm-hmm. that Nike wants to hire to design a sneaker, or right.
Making a movie on Cool Disco Dan, for crying out loud, you know.
He deserves it. That's one of the coolest things in the world.
It floors me.
Oh, Cool Disco Dan's the best.
Knowing how disrespected that was for many years.
Right, exactly. And then go back to the days of Minor Threat and Trouble Funk playing, and you had some doggy dudes in those go-go bands that were doing some great graffiti. And I love the idea that that's finally coming back. But, that's becoming a massive commercial
thing. It's becoming the mainstream.
Right. Good God, right. That's scary and wonderful at the same time.
and speaking of mainstream, if I may,
okay.
Also on September 12th will be the introduction of a limited edition run of Hardywood single 22-ounce bottles with an Ed Trask original RVA Street Art Festival design label.
Very nice.
They're going to do a limited 2,000 bottle run and be on sale. We expect September 12th until they're
gone. So it'll be there at the site and also at Hardywood?
They won't be at the site. They'll be at Hardywood or ABC Laws. Yeah, gotcha. They're antiquated.
We're
so
jumping the gun there. Sorry.
We wish, but they'll be available at Hardywood that weekend. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing label. We'll put that out this weekend. For people to look at, but it's pretty neat.
It's fantastic. Yeah, mom and dad, if you're listening, I made it. I'm on a beer label. No, but I will say, oh my God, the Hardywood guys are phenomenal. They've been wonderful to us.
That sounds like you guys are really working it.
We're trying.
You're listening to Open Source RVA on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm Don Harrison, and I've been talking to City Councilman John Beliles and artist/musician Ed Trask. Didn't ask you about Keepone this time. They're the founders and organizers behind the RVA Street Art Festival, which is taking place September 11th through the 15th at the old GRTC bus depot on Carey Street. For more information on the festival, including details about some of the artists participating, go to rvastreetart.com and or rvastreetart.tumblr.com. Hey, good luck with everything, guys.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you so
appreciate
much.
It.
I painted a sign on the van for you, mister. I painted a sign.
Broadcast of WRIR is made possible in part by Rostov's Coffee and Tea, 1618 West Main Street, now featuring home delivery everywhere in the city. Details on the web at rostovs.com. And support for WRIR also comes from the Farmers Market at St. Stephen's Church, providing weekly access to locally grown and prepared foods from more than 40 farmers and vendors. The Farmers Market at St. Stephen's every Saturday, 8 to noon, at the corner of Grove Avenue and 3 Chapped Road. Information at ststephensrichmond.net.
Moon went down
the best kind of a woman I found. Kind that will bring you up and won't let you down. Well, I paid her to sign, on the sign for you, mister. I paid her to sign.
And we're here with Ashley Hawkins, who is the executive director of Studio 23, one of the many organizations that are participating in the Street Art Festival, or just, I guess, individuals as well, right, Ashley?
Yeah, there's a bunch of us.
A ton of you making this thing happen. Nonprofit community print shop, communal art studio, printmaking gallery. She's on West Main near Page Bond and Reynolds Gallery for anybody who wants to go and check out their space. And they do educational outreach workshops and classes, which I think probably helps them play into what they're doing here with the Street Art Festival.
Yeah, it sure does.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing at the Street Art Festival, because it's big.
Yeah, it is. It's a giant thing that we're doing. We are a community print shop, like you said, and we really wanted to do something that was community-based at the Street Art Festival that got people involved and excited. So we thought, hey, what about a big map of our city? So we're printing a giant map of Richmond. It's about 8 feet square.
That's big.
It's big. We have a full-size version of it in the studio right now, and it's a big map. So
how do you print something like that, and where do you print it?
You print it with a steamroller is what you do. So we're laying it on the ground at the Street Art Festival for all to see. We're inking it up, and then we're putting fabric on it and rolling a steamroller over it.
And how do you rent a steamroller for the... Street Art Festival.
They actually at Sunbelt Rentals have been really nice and are lending it to us for the Art Festival, trusting us to use the steamroller, so we hope it goes well.
So you guys get to actually run the steamroller?
Oh, we do. Wow.
Can I join your collective?
Sure, absolutely. We'll raffle off some steamroller rides. So
excellent. So you guys obviously are looking forward to this.
We're really excited. It's been a few months in the making. We started the idea when we first found out about the Street Art Festival, trying to figure out how to do what we do in the studio on a grand scale. And we were actually fortunate to receive funding from Feast RVA, which is a community-based alternative funding platform for creative Richmond projects.
It's a little dinner thing that they do. And
yeah,
they do it, I think, quarterly.
Yep.
So probably all you had to say was steamroller printing on the street, going to be awesome, and they gave you... You were the winners.
We were the winners. It was really excited. I think the community-based aspect of it kept coming through. And so what we're doing, there's a couple different aspects of that. We are having the map, the kind of the baseline grid routed by Tectonics Design Group. So Chris Hildebrandt over there has been really nice and is helping us out with that.
So is this going to be, I mean, it's anatomically correct, so to speak.
Yeah, we had a lovely young lady named Ashley Moulton, who does some GIS mapping work, develop a map for us, and we got to pick and choose the layers and how we really wanted the map to look. So we went with an accurate map, but a pretty simple, basic version, because the idea now is that the community can come in and print smaller icons and symbols to add on to this
big
map.
So to speak.
Exactly.
Oh, wow, that's really neat. So tell me, I guess, for an artist or a group of artists like you guys, what about something like the Street Art Festival really appeals?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, you know, the community aspect of printmaking has, you know, been long established. These are always communal shops where people share ideas and techniques and work beside one another, because for an individual artist, this equipment is cost prohibitive. To buy a large etching press is $16,000.
It's a print shop.
So we're really used to working as a community, and really, you know, we are kind of the raw cheerleaders for artists in the city. We really want to provide low-cost studio space. We want to provide a community of support, exhibition opportunities, creative endeavors with other artists. So this really seemed to fit that, to get our artists working on this huge project and then bring it to the community where everybody could come in and contribute to the giant map with their own sort of, like you said, getting a place on the map. So I think the fact that the community is seeing what we do and contributing to it themselves is kind of a huge exciting thing for us, and is going to make a huge exciting thing as a map.
So first thing is, when are you laying this sucker out?
Well, the first opportunity people can come and sort of get involved with the project is actually this Friday evening. It'll be from 6 to 10 p.m., which is September 6th.
This is around First Friday.
Around First Friday.
But wrong end of town, so to speak.
Right. So we're on a little known fact, which we wish was better known, but the Uptown Arts District, where we are, does First Friday openings as well.
Don't tell anybody.
you're secret. In the know. Yeah. But we are setting the big routed map up in the gallery space, and people can come in and help carve elements of that map and symbols themselves.
Oh, so they'll actually be able to put what they're going to have going down on the road with they're not coming out after it's been printed and doing what they're doing. It becomes part of the original.
Yeah, we're doing
grid,
a kind
so
of a combo of both. So they'll be carving like the river lines and sort of decorative elements into the map, and then the icons are separate to be placed into the map itself after it's initially printed. So that's sort of the first opportunity to come out and sign a waiver, because there are sharp tools involved, but then be a part of kind of what we hope is a historic map.
Printmaking is very dangerous business.
Yeah, you've got to be careful and watch your fingers and toes, but we're hoping that everybody will come out for that. And again, that's 6 to 10 p.m. on the 6th of September. And then for the festival itself, we're printing on Saturday the 14th. So we'll lay the map down on the pavement there. We're going to ink it up with some giant rollers and ink that we have gotten from Speedball and Gamblin. We're nice enough to throw ink our
way. Other local companies that are making this happen or helping
to
make it happen.
It's been them, Gamblin, Speedball, and Plaza, as well as Feast and Tectonics. It's kind of great.
Don't you forget the Sunbelt folks.
And the Sunbelt Steamroller folks. I know. They're our heroes, our heavy machinery heroes. But that will actually, that will be the 14th, which is Saturday, from 10 to 5. We're hoping to print, 10 to 12 of these giant maps, and people can come out and see that process, help ink, see us drive a steamroller, hopefully accurately and with no injuries.
Close enough.
Yes.
And then secondly, I guess, is there any sort of like a sign-up sheet, or do people need to, they just show up and they become part of it?
Yep, show up and become part of it. We're hoping that everybody can print their icons and add them to different versions of the map. So like we said, printmaking has a bunch of different, the idea of multiples and different versions. So we'll hopefully have a few different versions of important elements of the map that people have added throughout the process.
Great. Thank you very much, Ashley Hawkins. She's executive director of Studio 23. It's a nonprofit community print shop that is participating in the big thing, the Street Art Festival, Richmond Street Art Festival, which is coming up. And I guess we're starting kicking it off here with First Friday this weekend.
Sure are.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
First Friday's Art Walk showcases nearly 40 diverse creative venues in downtown Richmond between Belvedere and 8th Street, and in Jackson Ward and Monroe Ward. The Art Walk features galleries, unique shopping, top-rated restaurants, and cultural organizations. First Fridays is a free self-guided experience held rain or shine between 5 and 9:30 p.m. the first Friday of each month, and celebrates Richmond's thriving arts and cultural community. First Fridays is sponsored by the University of Richmond, Venture Richmond, Richmond.com, Style Weekly, Richmond Center Stage, and the Jefferson Hotel. More information is available at rvafirstfridays.com.
And that's Open Source RVA for Friday, September 6th. I'm Don Harrison, and my co-host is Chris Dovey. The Richmond Public Media News team is Brittany Tracy, Cameron Vigliano, and Onofrio Castiglia. Our producers are Jay Westerman and Gabby Skardust, and the role of Chaps is played this week by noted character actor Mike McKenzie. If you like us, say so at the Open Source RVA Facebook page. And if your thing is breaking news and past podcasts of Richmond's Weekly Audio News Digest, go to our website at rvaopensource.com. Hey, you can show us how much you like us there by hitting that Donate Now button and showing your support for our community-focused news and talk show. Until next week, Color Us Gone,